We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Inside the largest insider trading ring in Wall Street history, a claim of innocence of the charges, an admission of guilt, of bad judgment in the choice of partners, a charge of prosecutorial abuse that destroyed a business, a reputation, and a family, confessions of a Wall Street insider today. Michael Kimmelman is a graduate of Lafayette College and the University of Southern California Law School. My daughter's getting a master's degree next month. They're going to graduation out at USC.
Excellent.
Mike was an associate at the White Shoe New York law firm Sullivan & Cromwell. He was founding partner, managing director of Incremental Capital, a hedge fund with over $250 million in assets, which closed shortly after his arrest. Post-prison, he's involved with new ventures in culinary, retail, and entertainment spaces, also dedicated himself to prison and education reform, and he's local to our WGCH Greenwich flagship station, hailing from Mamaroneck, New York. The new book, generating a lot of buzz out there, Confessions of a Wall Street Insider, a cautionary tale of rats, feds, and banksters. Mike, good to see you.
Great to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in studio as well. Even several hours earlier. are you sorry, by the way, that the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, is no longer in that job?
Not quite heartbroken. whether it was a resignation or a firing, I think it was probably time and not a bad thing.
And we just did an interview with David Gannick, who also had his office stormed by the FBI and was innocent of the charges. So it's a pretty brutal event to go through, particularly if you're not guilty.
A tremendous amount of collateral damage there. An entire firm and, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of employees laid off for more or less a public show of force.
Yes, and your firm had 55 people, I think, when they invaded your home, which we'll talk about. Let me ask you this, though, first. At the time, Preet had a record of like 80-0, undefeated. Now, he's since had a couple of the convictions overturned. Is the good that comes together from changing and breaking the culture of insider trading, say, okay, we'll excuse the couple of mistakes, although you were one of the couple of mistakes, or not, in your mind?
No. I do think there was quite a bit of good that was done, and that investigation and some of the people who were prosecuted obviously should have been prosecuted, and the evidence and the facts say that those were good cases to make. But where I disagree is the legal system is sort of set up so that we let, you know, 10 guilty people go free rather than one innocent person go to prison, and those odds were flipped on their head. In those 80 or 88 cases, it wasn't just me. There was plenty, several others who probably were innocent of the charges, who
were
just coerced into pleading or forced to testify against others, you know, to get themselves a lighter sentence. But it became a problem when it became a singular obsession of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the administration, especially during the height of the financial crisis, when there was lots of bad actors and other, you know, people to be investigated, if not for directly causing the financial crisis, then for certainly contributing to it. And all those cases were neglected in favor of these easy, money, easy headline insider trading cases that the prosecutors could make and then trumpet in the press that they're actually doing something about this and ameliorate an angry public who had every right to be angry.
Roger Rottenham, of course, now everybody knows one of the biggest, the biggest insider trading ring.
Sure.
At the time, are you saying that you were not aware of the degree to which this guy was dealing in inside info?
Not even close.
Really?
And there's, you know, when I go back and say that to some people, there are a few who are like, come on, everybody thought Raj, or everybody knew Raj. And I think that's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. There might have been a few people, but I attribute it in the same vein as Enron. You know, when you say Enron now, everyone's like, yeah, what a fraud. So when I worked at a law firm at Sullivan & Cromwell, everybody wanted to go work for Enron. Enron was considered the greatest company out there, the most innovative, smartest people, like literally Bethany McLean, smartest guys in the room, or whoever wrote
She's great, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, cover of Business Week, Ken Skilling, cover of Fortune, the smartest guy out there, McKinsey, Harvard. And then, of course, you know, 6 months later, everyone's like, yeah, I knew it. So it's Monday morning quarterbacking. To me, Raj was just the smartest tech investor in the game. And, you know, he had a $7 billion fund. There was glowing articles and press about him. And obviously, you know, there was some other stuff going on that he shouldn't have been doing. But you can't say everybody knew that. I don't even think, you know, a small sliver of people knew that. He was just a good investor.
So then let's see if my next question is even relevant to you then. Did insider trading become so pervasive that I compare it to steroids in baseball, which is you had to do it to compete, and we just sort of overlooked it? Did you get that feeling?
I don't think it's a bad analogy. I don't think it was as prevalent. I don't think it was acknowledged. It certainly, at least from a prosecutorial standpoint, it was ignored and neglected for 15 or 20 years. And then the way I attribute it more is that there was always sort of two tiers. So there was a tier of people like a Raj who had extreme access and, you know, could be on the phone with a Goldman Sachs board member or an insider and clearly getting inside information. There's no doubt about that. Then there are other people, and I consider myself in that other group, who would hear things on a trading desk. You know, we would probably get 10 to 12 rumors a week or calls, you know, high conviction play, right. You know, my SAC guy likes this, my Galleon guy or other hedge funds are looking into this company. And that's a radically different level of access or information, because in that case, there's no way to confirm or validate the call. There's no way to, you know, go out and question the intermediaries and determine the credibility or the conviction level of the call. So it's sort of a swim at your own risk mentality for everybody else. But the bottom line is, Jim, if you look at charts of any stock that had any significant corporate activity for 20 years, and there's been plenty of academic studies that have done this, somebody always knows. That's generally was our philosophy. So we were trying to piggyback off people who we thought would know. I mean, nobody takes, you know, a call and hopes it's wrong. You know, you're in this game to make money and trading to make money. You hope whoever's giving you an idea, trading idea, has done their own research, done their own work, and it's a good idea. But half the time I would get a call like that, I would actually flip it on the other side and short it or take the other side of the trade because I thought it was deliberate disinformation from a hedge fund. You know, and that's a common tactic too in the game, in that if a fund has a large position and then they hear that bad news is coming or get keyed into that, they need to get out of that position without crushing the stock. So what they'll do often is put out a false rumor of, hey, great earnings coming,
sleazy,
or somebody's kicking the tires. And in that additional buying power momentum,
sneak it out.
They'll dump the stock and not crush it.
We should say SAC is Steve Cohen's former hedge fund, and Galleon is Roger Rottenham's. Let me ask you this. You could have obviously a very low profile right now. You're out. Why are you putting yourself back in the public spotlight?
Because I think it's a story that needs to be told. I think there was, you know, my case was outrageous in many ways. I didn't get justice in that case, so I am out for redemption. We had a judge who has now been overruled in every single insider trading case that came after mine. He used the wrong jury
instructions. Bad luck for you, though, eh?
It was bad luck for me. And again, more than bad luck. I mean, I think there was a deliberate act on the part of the U.S. attorney, as well as, you know, this judge was complicit in it, that he was a hand-picked judge in some ways. You know, there was a whole series of insider trading cases. Somehow, the judge we had heard an overwhelming, you know, large proportion of those cases. And in those cases, I think cases were steered to him because he was giving the U.S. attorney a lower hurdle to jump over. He was omitting an entire element of the crime in the jury instructions and giving wrong jury instructions. And both sides have now admitted that. The judge has acknowledged, after a very public spanking by the Second Circuit as well as the media, that the jury instructions were incorrect. They were using the wrong law and had omitted an entire element of the crime. And so has Preet Bharara and the U.S. attorney. But instead of what I would consider doing the right thing and vacating my conviction, especially after I went to prison for several years, probation, had my firm destroyed, my reputation, my licenses, and everything else, is they're hanging their hat on a technicality or a procedural defect and trying to get out of doing the right thing, which would be vacating the case.
Is it important to you that it get vacated at some point?
From a pragmatic, practical day-to-day?
It doesn't.
No. I already served the time. I already had everything taken away from me. I'm a guy who's going to come out and do what I do. I grind. I'm a father.
Yeah.
I'm going to live my life. But at the same time, from a reputational and a redemption point of view, it would be the right thing to do, so they should do it.
Are you able to vote and things like that? When you?
I think the way it works, it's a state-by-state case, and I don't want to go into it too in depth because I haven't researched the laws, but just as a kick, I asked a friend, to go when they voted this year in New York to just see if I was on the voting rolls. Just ask the question. And she did. And, of course, I was there. She did some follow-up asking of, well, if he's there, because, there's all this talk of voter fraud and everything else.
Right.
He said, how does it work? And the people at the poll said, look, if he was there in 2012 and voted, he would be on the rolls. So that's why he's on the rolls. And, of course, in 2012, I was in prison. So I clearly wasn't voting there. But it was a mess.
Talking with Mike Kimmelman, wrongly convicted of insider trading. We'll be right back.
Attention investors, respected names in the financial services industry are not evaluating if there will be a significant market downturn, but when. Higher interest rates and prospects of a trade war suggest the stock market is headed into a perilous direction. Subprime mortgages, which are back, could potentially devastate the real estate market, as they did before. And with stocks simply overdue for a fall after this second longest bull run in history, even bullish analysts are recognizing these indicators that equities are in big trouble and have projected stock market losses up to 40%. You can protect your IRA or 401k for maximum safety and opportunity with physical gold and silver, as they are assets that remain genuine stores of value no matter what's happening in the marketplace. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806 to get your free guide to precious metals investing. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, $100,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-285-4765 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-285-4765. Again, 800-285-4765.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute, free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Mike Kimmelman, the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Insider, a cautionary tale of rats, feds, and banksters. You mentioned this briefly, but let's get it out there. A lot of people feel that insider trading is rather victimless, and the mortgage crisis wiped out at the time about 40% of a lot of middle Americans' net worth. And the prosecutors seem to, A, not focus on it, and B, say they couldn't prove guilt when we knew that a lot of the folks on Wall Street knew that the mortgages were complete crap, full of liar loans. Do you think this was a big mistake not to focus on that?
I think it was not only a mistake, but I think it was a deliberate mistake. I think the insider trading cases, like you said, easy to prove. Easy money, easy headlines. It's a simple and convenient narrative that the administration can sell to an angry public, you know, to show them they're doing something about the financial crisis, when in reality, had they taken a proper investigative approach and actually pursued some of these cases, it may have yielded some real targets and some real reform. But they never did that. And it wasn't because they didn't try. It was because, look, if you're going to take on real power and real money, there's a chance you lose. And if there's a chance you lose, it's going to hurt your career. And unfortunately, the career calculus plays such a large role in the cases that are brought that it's very sad. And it's a truth of where we are right now that winning is the ultimate goal when it comes to the Justice Department. That's it. Truth and justice take a backseat to winning, and that's unfortunate.
All right, let's jump right in now. Tell the folks what it was like to basically, out of the blue, be perp walked out of your house in that nice town down the road called Larchmont.
It was shocking, and it was, you know, terrorizing is a word I've used before. It was completely unnecessary. I was arrested and in front of my family and dogs and multiple armed agents and just in a giant show of force that was designed to do one thing, terrorize, and get me to cooperate. Now, you know, the amazing thing is, again, I had this done without anybody asking me a single question, and that's another issue I have. What would have been the harm in having the SEC or the DOJ or anybody
ask you first,
confront me and ask me a question, say, you know what, we think you were a part of this insider trading ring. Come in and talk to us, or we're going to arrest you. Or they could have said, come in, you know, present yourself for arrest, so we don't have to do this. But to sort of barge into the house, deliberately scaring children, my wife.
It was early in the morning, right? You were asleep?
5 a.m., you know, multiple. It was a SWAT team, you know, with the K-9s and everything else. You know, and they searched the house and made a big show of searching it. And, you know, like I said, you know, what am I being arrested for? And they wouldn't really talk. They wanted me to cooperate. When they found out I wasn't going to cooperate, it was securities fraud. It was a very short and clipped. And, you know, but then we have to search the house. You know, and what are you searching for, the securities? You know, what's going on here? But like I said, they should have asked the question, because I think in this case, they really didn't do their homework, because once they actually did a fuller investigation And we were trying to get the case dropped before I got indicted. The way it works is you get arrested, then you get indicted. Sometimes it's done at the same time. But they ended up indicting me, but the day of indictment saying, hey, we realize your guy is radically different from any of the other guys in this case, and he's a peripheral player at most. Let him plead guilty to one count of conspiracy, and we'll get him out of the case. We'll give him probation, no jail time. Just be done. We don't want you there anymore. And of all the prosecutors I've talked to, and I actually have a lot of friends who were prosecutors before this, and they're still my friends because they understand this case was a joke to some degree.
Yep.
You know, they said, I've never even considered indicting somebody and then giving them probation for not cooperating the day of indictment. It just doesn't happen. And the amount of money they charged in the indictment was $16,000. You know,
that you gained through insider trading.
Yeah, the prosecutors I've talked to are like, I've never even seen a federal indictment for $16,000. You belong on people's court, but any amount of money, it's not the amount of money that's relevant. You know, I didn't commit the crime. I could tell you in no uncertain terms, I did not trade 3Com on inside information. The case was a vapor type case that was brought at the height of the financial crisis down the street from Occupy Wall Street. So you had this public frenzy to convict, and I knew I was dead literally the moment I walked into the courtroom. And the government wanted me out of that case, and they clearly wouldn't give me a separate trial because they knew sitting me next to my partner, who was guilty of sin, would have been an effective trial strategy. But I knew I was dead during first day of jury selection when the judge, you know, trying to get rid of some of the biases, asked the jury pool, how many of you here have a negative view of hedge funds or Wall Street? And you saw the hand shot up. You know, you would have think they were giving away a free iPad the way hands shot up. and from that point on, literally any comment you heard was, you know, nobody gets arrested by accident and you know, everything else. I knew it was going to be an uphill battle, especially when you consider the amount of money involved and that a lot of the members of the jury didn't have access to that type of financial means. And that was, you know, one of the more effective tactics of the prosecutors. They just put on the whiteboard, highlighted it. You know, he made $150,000 in a single day. And meanwhile, they did that with stocks they didn't even charge me. So that doesn't make any sense either. Yeah. I mean, how do you put trades that I wasn't charged with? Because they were clearly just trying to say it's so much money. And again, it is from a gross amount, but from a relative or a net amount, it was a tiny fraction of the money I was managing. But for a guy who makes, you know, our forewoman worked at Best Buy in the Bronx, making $7.50 an hour selling DVDs part-time. Yeah. So $150,000 in a day is an enormous amount of money to anyone.
She thinks you're just a greedy guy. So I will go to the other side of that. You do feel you were guilty of bad judgment, and you just led into that pretty well. Your partner, Zvi Goffer, I think is how you say it. Talk a little bit about that.
So, I mean, Zvi is a classic con artist or grifter. He was a very charming guy, a good-looking guy. He had, you know, sort of a rags-to-riches story that he was fond of promoting, you know, grew up with nothing. And then was very big about telling people he had turned down, and he had the letter, I turned down a JD MBA, you know, acceptance from Harvard because I was making so much money trading.
Sounds like Martoma, by the way.
Not entirely different.
Yeah.
And, of course, when I did get arrested, they put us all in a hangar. And, again, of the 8 or 7 people, you know, 9 people I was arrested with, I only knew 2 or 3 of them. The other 6 I thought were part of a different case, but they were actually part of our case, and they were interrogating us all at once.
Mind-boggling.
And Zvi was not far from me and, you know, having the time of his life, you know, ordering bagels, drinking orange juice, entertaining the agents, and the agents asked him, you know, what's your highest level of education? And he looked right at me and smiled and winked and said high school. So, you know,
which you didn't know.
Right. No, I mean, he was, you know, he told everybody he graduated summa cum laude from Binghamton, had been accepted to Harvard, you know, perfect SATs, and he had a career trajectory that wouldn't make you think too much about it. I mean, he had worked for a great couple of hedge funds and then got a job working directly with Raj, who, again, at the time was the best tech investor in the game, bar none, and Galleon, one of the best funds out there. People would sell their, you know, little finger to go work for Galleon at that time.
We're getting down to the last 40 seconds here of this segment. How quickly, I mean, you must have picked up pretty quickly that he was a BS artist and a con guy.
Yes.
So you have to take responsibility for going into business with this sucker? Or?
Absolutely, and that's one of the ultimate lessons, I think, is at a certain point, if you've been around him for 6 months or more, there started to be some lies that wouldn't add up. But it was more, you know, there was a lot of behavior that goes on, you know, drinking and driving or whatever it is, small vices that I think a lot of people do. So there was nothing that rose to the level of, hey, this guy might be trying to bribe a lawyer. But it was just somebody who I didn't trust and somebody who I didn't feel good about, but nothing that would rise to the level of, hey, this is a sociopath. I got to walk away from a, you know, an 8 or a 9 figure firm that I built and I own a huge chunk of in order to get rid of this psychopath. Unfortunately, you know, you're responsible for the people you surround ourselves with, and I take ownership of that. It's what I try to impart to my children and at-risk youth that I speak to. So, yeah, you have to stand up.
So to summarize it, he's 100% guilty, and you were unaware of that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Talking with Mike Kimmelman, wrongly convicted of insider trading. We'll be right back.
If you missed open enrollment for Obamacare and are without health insurance, I have good news for you. Hello, this is Kerry Hall, America's healthcare advocate and the president of Benefits by Design. The federal government has reopened enrollment for Obamacare health insurance beginning March 15th, which means you can apply for health insurance with one of our licensed exchange certified agents who will walk you through the process to see if you qualify for a subsidy that could pay for all or part of your health insurance. And how much does using one of our licensed agents cost you? Nothing. That's right, it costs you nothing, and we're there to help you 24/7 after you enroll. So don't miss this second chance. Call 913-385-2224. That's 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com. Once again, that phone number, 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Here's important new information from the Diabetes Solution Center for you, a family member, or a loved one suffering with diabetes. If you have lost your provider, or if you need a provider for diabetic supplies, you may qualify to receive your diabetic testing supplies now with little or no out-of-pocket cost, regardless of your age. All you need is Medicare or private insurance to be potentially eligible. Call the Diabetes Solution Center right now for details. Just takes a couple of minutes. Our friendly, knowledgeable agents will give you free, no-obligation information, handle all the insurance paperwork, and make sure your supplies are delivered directly to your door for free.
Call U.S. Medical Supply 24 hours a day. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. Call right now. 800-597-9323.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-563-0393. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-563-0393. 800-563-0393. That's 800-563-0393.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Mike Kimmelman, the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Insider, a cautionary tale of rats, feds, and banksters. I want to ask you, first off, this is something that always gets to me. You guys make your money because you really inherently understand risk management, okay? How is it that you guys screw up so badly on the plea stuff? You have Matthew Martomi, you have this guy who has a 10-year sentence, V, we're talking about. You're innocent, you got a 2-year sentence. How do you guys screw up that risk management assessment?
That is a great question, and I'm actually writing an article about it right now, which hopefully will be finished soon. But I could speak to Zvi directly. He was one of these people who, once you have that narrow view of the world, and he had external facts didn't seep through. I think Martoma is probably a similar character. You know, you're used to getting what you want. You're used to excelling. You don't really take other people's opinions as well. You have your narrow filter. Zvi sort of took an approach, and again, there were 7 informants. There was 500 hours of tape. There were some of the craziest tapes you've ever heard. You know, him whispering, hey, if we get caught, we're going to the big house, and this and that type of stuff. You know, really cartoonish, ridiculous
things. By the way, you never appear in these tapes, right, except for one
mention? I'm in some of the tapes, but like not those types of tapes. There are some tapes where he's talking to me about plays. There are some tapes that, you know, don't sound great from a contextual point of view because they're taken out of context or referring to stocks that I wasn't trading or charged with. But I'm not on the tapes where he's literally graphically, and there's 4 or 5 guys in the case who are graphically discussing inside information, lawyers, bribes, and all that stuff. You know,
unbelievable.
We made a big deal about at trial of the 9 people in the case. I was the only one that didn't have a prepaid phone or a burner phone. Everybody else had a burner phone. I was the only one who didn't pay cash bribes. Everybody else was paying cash bribes. But in Zvi's case, he just, you know, hey, F it. OJ got off. I'm going to get off. These things are ridiculous.
So I've got all these tapes, and Martone was the same way. And they could plea bargain their way to X.
Yes.
And they take 10 years.
Insane and idiotic. And it actually crushed me, too, because the government knew I was a peripheral player, so they had first offered me the probation deal.
Right.
Additionally, then, as we were going to trial, they said, look, you know, my attorney went to them and said, I take it if, you know, the brothers, there was V and his brother, were the only two others that, you know, were foolish enough to go to trial with me. If they drop out of the case and take the plea, I take it you're not going to go forward with Mike's case. And they said yes. So they were literally offering me a deferred prosecution, which is as close to dropping the charges as you can get these days, if the brothers pled. And my attorney was like, of course they're going to plea. This is a, you know, airtight case. Don't worry about it. And I kept telling him, they're not. He is, you know, single focused and thinks he's going to win at trial and he's going to pull some type of magic, you know, rabbit out of a hat. But he's going to get. And I had these conversations and we almost came to blows several times in bars and elsewhere going up to trial where I said, you're going to get 10 years, bud. I don't know what you're thinking or what you're doing, but you're crushing your brother. You're crushing me, who, you know, had nothing to do with this. Take a plea, be a man, and he refused. And, of course, you know, he said, no, most I'll get is 5 years, 4 years.
Raj was the same way, basically.
Yeah, Raj, I think they were making a big example out of. So right. I don't think Raj was offered a plea that was probably that attractive, and I don't know if
he was
offered. So they may have said, you know, plea to it and you'll get 10 because you might get 15. And if, look, they're offering 10, you know, maybe it's worth rolling the dice, especially when you could pay $50 million for, you know, a legal team that can drum up everything in the world. But, yeah, Martoma, a whole other story.
Tell us, if we go back a little bit to the path, you're at Sullivan and Cromwell, which is like, you know, about his white shirt program, right to, you know, partner and all that. How do you, first, I guess you considered it basically sucking your soul out. How did you get from there to essentially trading, which would seem to be about the least thing a risk-averse lawyer would even contemplate.
Sure. And I was never truly risk-averse. Even as a lawyer, I thought I had the right mentality to counsel clients and not be the principal or the client. You know, when I was on a good career path, I was respected at the firm. But it was the late 90s, and people were making, you know, a lot more money than I was and working, more importantly, a hell of a lot less than I was. You know, I was sleeping under my desk 2 to 3 times a night and editing documents. Like, you know, as a 25, 26-year-old kid in New York City, that's not a job that you get excited
about. It was
worse
than Lewisburg Prison.
There was a Groundhog Day element to both of it. But so I said I wanted to trade. I had always traded. In law school, I had, you know, made some good money trading and on, you know, very sort of lousy trading tools. And even at Sullivan & Cromwell, the compliance officer, I kind of made him rewrite the rules, or they had to do it around me because nobody traded back then, you know, but you needed to get permission. And then I think there was a 30-day or a 7-day hold, you know, and it was during the Asian crisis. I was banging around and, you know, trying to trade, you know, this and that. And I remember, I think one day off, you know, I bought Cisco off the Thai baht devaluation. And when it was down, you know, $12 or $10, and sold it up, you know, $5 the next day and made like $10,000, and literally said, all right, I just made more than a month's salary in 10 minutes, you know, for something that was the most obvious trade I've ever seen. I might have a better, you know, career elsewhere.
So all your compatriots there must have thought you were out of your mind.
They did a little bit with regard to that stuff.
I mean, I mean, out of mind that you would walk away from that.
Absolutely.
To go
trade. And,
yeah, go ahead.
Yes and no. I mean, there's nobody who goes to big law these days who is super excited to be there. And, you know, there are some people who thrive in the environment and add value to clients and are great lawyers.
Sounds terrible, though.
But there's probably 10% of them that really consider it a calling. The rest of them are doing it to pay off student debt or because they think they'll make money at the end. I was never a guy who money was the ultimate goal. That just wasn't, you know, what I was chasing. I liked the intellectual challenge of trading. So I interviewed for, you know, a Bear Stearns risk arbitrage job and did well. Maybe that was the only bullet I dodged by not going to Bear Stearns for risk arb, but ended up taking a couple of proprietary trading jobs and just kept, you know, moving around from fund to fund.
Do you think that essentially, these proprietary trading firms and like Datech, they have, you know, quasi, you know, sleazy reputations. Do you think there's value in day trading ultimately?
Right now, no. Back then, absolutely. I mean, back then, you know.
Well, no, I don't mean that you can make money.
Right.
I mean, is it adding any value to society? To are you creating anything?
Well, that's a great overall question that's better applied now to high-frequency trading.
Yes.
I mean, high-frequency trading. The people who are in favor of it will argue it adds liquidity. I don't agree with that. It's a tax on the retail investor. It's a tax on the market. And do we really want, you know, investing tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure to try to gain a, you know, 1/10 of a fraction of a second?
Yeah, which is, by the way, legalized front running to begin with.
Legalized front running, and maybe it's not even legal in some cases, but it is. It's a waste of societal resources. But, you know, so is trading to a degree.
By the way, you make a good point in this book, too, that Goldman, Merrill, the Lehman's, the bulge bracket firms, Morgan Stanley, are, in a sense, a cartel, and that the SEC really goes and plays with these Datech-type guys and lets the mob control things. I don't think a lot of people understand that.
No, and that was mind-blowing to me when I was early on in my trading career, because I had worked for, you know, at Sullivan, we had done a lot of work with the SEC for IPOs, for private placements and whatnot, and everybody always thought they were the, you know, the beat cop that was protecting the retail investor and so on and so forth. And then you get to one of these firms that was an upstart like Datech, who was utilizing a technology that had been put in place called SOES, which was basically the first electronic trading that was put in place after 1987 in the market crash when brokers weren't answering their phones.
Yep.
And it was for the small investor. And then you see the SEC disregarding blatant, you know, predatory behavior on the part of banks and collusion to keep a pricing cartel and keep spreads artificially wide, and then going after a guy at Datech who, you know, may have canceled an order after, you know, 15 seconds instead of 18 seconds. And you start looking at that again and again and realizing that the SEC was really the corrupt cop that was there to protect that cartel. And things have changed a little bit since then. Since the financial crisis, I do believe Wall Street has changed quite a bit, and the regulators have changed quite a bit, but back then they were basically the incompetent, corrupt cop that was protecting the cartel.
So things were pretty wild at Daytech, though. I love the Christmas parties described as the Full Employment Act for sex workers and unlicensed pharma dealers, and you do $500,000 of damage at the Waldorf.
I don't know if that was the exact number, but there was quite a bit of rabble rousing, and back then in the late 90s, look, there was behavior that wasn't always admired. It certainly, some of it wouldn't be tolerated today, as it shouldn't be. But this was, people were making a lot of money late 90s. You're taking 21-year-old kids right out of Harvard or right out of Dartmouth, giving them a trading pad. They're all athletes, so they're hyper competitive. And this isn't like Wolf of Wall Street boiler room garbage, or some of these others. These were real smart guys.
It wasn't pump and dump. But
who were playing a video game, which is what really the markets amount to, the most advanced, most difficult video game out there. And when you give a kid like that and he suddenly makes $100,000 in a month, probably more than his dad made, all last year or possibly in his life. And then you start, you get into that New York lifestyle.
It's a whole big deal. I went to business school at Dartmouth then, so I'll gloss over that. These clowns going into.
I always called the Dartmouth guys the best drinkers after Lafayette. I mean, at Lafayette, people, happy hour was a religious.
I don't want to admit, but in our dorms at Tuck, we were on tap in the dorms.
Yeah, no, it's same here. They used to have keg nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it was not conducive towards academic excellence, I'll put it
that
way.
But we did work our butts off, I will have to say this. We'll talk in the final segment moving forward and a little bit about prison as well.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 immediately. That's 800-557-6095. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to them and give you their feedback. If they like what they read, they'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. They handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 800-557-6095 now for your free author submission kit. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 800-557-6095. That's 800-557-6095. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 for your free author submission kit.
You love your car, and so does Car Checks. We're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau and have been helping people avoid spending a fortune in costly car repair bills for almost 20 years. For about $2.50 a day, you get the peace of mind in knowing that your expensive repair bills may be covered by a vehicle protection plan. Think about if your air conditioner or the transmission goes out. That could cost you a few $1,000s, or you can get protected with Car Checks and pay only a standard deductible. For about $2.50 a day, you can make sure you don't get stuck with the bill for covered repairs. Keep your car in tip-top shape. For a completely free quote, call Car Checks now at 800-958-5207, 800-958-5207. That's 800-958-5207. Or visit GetProtected.com. That's GetProtected.com.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945. 85.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Mike Kimmelman, a hedge fund manager, went to jail and back. Tell us what prison is like. And you were at Lewisburg, actually near Lafayette and Lehigh, but it's not the country club that people thought it was. And then you were in the same prison with these poor guys who sucked you into the trial, the two brothers.
I've described it as barbaric, and that's a good description. It's also incredibly mundane. It's like Groundhog Day. You're struggling to fill your days. In prison, there is a scarcity of almost everything, a scarcity of privacy, of decency. But what you do have is almost endless time. So I had time, and I tried to fill that by writing, going over the case. And
this is the book that came out of it, right?
It is the book that came out of it. It is trimmed down tremendously. I wrote about 800 pages while I was away. Obviously, nobody wants to read 800 pages on, prison and law and trading, or maybe like seven of us do, but most people don't. So I trimmed that down to about 250 pages. But yeah, so I wrote, and, one of the strangest things about the prison experience was that the BOP, which is the Bureau of Prisons, in its infinite wisdom, decided that it would be a great idea to put me and the Goffer brothers together in prison. So Zvi had gotten there before me. In his insane calculations, I was the one who helped get him convicted, not the seven informants that got up and said, yeah, not the 500 hours of tape of him saying, holy cow, if we get caught, we're going to jail. But me, because I put up on the board, no prepaid cell phone, no cash bribes, no tapes. Again, at trial, we called the lead FBI case agent was our only defense witness. I mean, think about how unusual that is. And we asked her one question. In 2 years of body wires, wiretaps, tens of thousands of instant messages, emails, phone calls, everything else, can you point to one call, tape, or transcript where Mike Kimmelman is given inside information and trades on it? And she hemmed and hawed and shook her head and this and that, but finally had to admit, no, I can't. So,
did you feel any danger? I mean, apparently Zvi passed around that you might have been a rat, which of course is a way to get yourself killed in prison.
Right. He was the dumbest criminal, which the tapes make clear. He was the dumbest defendant, which a guy who was offered a plea of about 5 years could have been home in three, instead got sentenced to 10 years. And he also became the dumbest inmate out there because, he got there early. He tried to arrange for people to hurt me. Life is very cheap in prison and money is very dear. So for a small amount of money, you can arrange for things. And he spread false rumors, such as that I was a rat. Now, that can get you hurt in prison. Obviously, if you're going to spread a false rumor like that, you're going to upset people who have been there and there is a sort of jail, you know, prison code, you don't go around calling people rats that aren't rats. And I had proof that I wasn't, obviously. I went to trial. So a lot of the Italian guys and a lot of the guys who had been there for a long time were like, how are you a cooperator if you went to trial? And I said, exactly. And so that then got them angry because it was really a violation of that.
You know, are you worried about him when he gets out of prison?
I mean, anybody who is stupid enough to do the things he did, sure, you have to have some concern. You know, hopefully he's moved on with his life and gotten smarter, but I doubt it. I mean, he was doing.
Did you hang out with these guys at all while you were there? Did you talk to them much? Or
no, I mean, I tried to quash whatever anger and prison's not the place to explore these types of things. You know, especially at a minimum security prison has a zero tolerance for violence. So. Even if somebody came up to me and jumped me and beat the crap out of me, if I had marks on myself and the guards looked at me, I would get sent to solitary, and then they would transfer me up in security to a low or a medium, and a low or a medium, you start to get raped. So it's not a good thing.
Wow.
I tried to quash that. He was too stupid. I had, you know, again, other people broached
okay.
a piece.
Let me ask you this. What was this like? Surprised to read. Your family, your wife and kids only visited you twice during the whole time you were there. Your parents came more often. How did you deal with that? And you were also served for divorce in prison.
It was heartbreaking. It was tough to deal with. My kids actually came quite a bit. My parents would fly from Los Angeles to New York, pick them up, and drive the 3 or 4 hours and have them visit me. So I saw them every 6 weeks or so, which was a taste of the real world, the outside world, and, of course, keeps you going. At the same time, it is heart-rending to see them in that type of situation. And I talk about it at length in the book, some of the sadistic and awful things at the prison did to visiting families, or my family in particular as well. I tell the story of a guard literally ripping a McDonald's Happy Wheel car out of my 2-year-old son's hand, just because he felt like it. And that's, you know, some of the hardest things to deal with. So the fact that my wife didn't come, you know, hurt it tremendously. In her defense, you know, something like this, and I've said it before, it could either bring you together or pull you apart.
Right.
And we both let it pull us apart. And until you've walked a mile in her shoes right. and dealt with the stress and the public shame and everything else, I would ask people to withhold judgment. So, and she was busy supporting the kids. I mean, she was, at that time, our sole, you know, means right. of support and working. But she, you know, it took it particularly hard.
Yeah. And it is understandable because she's innocent of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
You're stuck in this thing.
As she liked to remind me, she married a Jewish lawyer from the San Fernando Valley, not a mobster from Queens.
So. They strangled your wife's business by basically telling your bank you were doing money laundering, and she has a business that, you know, she was having to pay vendors. They appeared to violate lawyer and spousal privilege. You were followed into a bagel shop. And, you know, I'll stop there. You can go on.
No, I mean, you hit it, and there was plenty of others. The law enforcement activities that went on during this case and the prosecutorial overreach, it was basically a culture of lawlessness. And there was a political, obviously, mandate to go find some people and hold them responsible and get guilty pleas out of them. But the actions that they took were reminiscent of, you know, the Stasi in East Germany or Soviet. It's not stuff you would expect from United States law enforcement. I mean, I was a guy who grew up and, you know, loved the United States, Star Spangled Banner, favorite song would tear up and baseball and apple pie and all that. And to have, like you said, some of the activities they did, such as shutting down my bank accounts, I mean, that's the ultimate guilty, you know, before proven innocent. It's the exact flip of what it's supposed to be. How do you shut down someone's bank accounts? How do you then go shut down my wife's bank accounts that her business depends on, that we're depending on for our family? I mean, good luck trying to pay your mortgage these days with a money order.
And did they give you access to all the transcripts in a timely fashion?
Look, prosecutors play that game all the time. They leak the information out. A lot of people end up pleading guilty before they've even seen exculpatory evidence that's out there.
Wow.
So they were still dumping tapes on us a week or a couple days before trial that were helpful to my trial. I mean, there were multiple tapes of an FBI informant who actually sat next to me on the trading desk for 18 months, wired up, wearing a wire, trying to incriminate me every day, and they didn't even call him at trial. So if I was part of this big, huge conspiracy...
And did he go to jail, that guy? Or?
He cooperated, so in our system, cooperators get a free pass. He did not go to prison.
Anyway, I want to thank Mike Kimmelman. It takes a lot of guts, by the way, to take on the feds, if you will, particularly Pete Barra's office. They're very tough. And the book is Confessions of a Wall Street Insider, a cautionary tale of rats, feds, and banksters. And there's a lot of, I would call, dark humor in it, too. So you'll enjoy it from that perspective, a lot of sarcasm as well as the truth.
Thanks, Jim.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.